Welcome to Coochie Conversations, where we give you the real on all things women's health, spirituality, and motherhood. Empowering women to have sovereignty over themselves, we shine light on the disparities that women face daily as divine feminine beings. So steep your favorite tea, roll up your favorite smoke blend, and tune into this week's episode of Coochie Conversations. Peace Tribe, it's your girl Bianca Pittman, aka Divine Mother, your Coochie Conversations host, and today we are back with part two of our lactation series with certified lactation counselor Janice Clark. Thank you so much for coming back.
Hi again.
Been good. Been flowing, you know, as the days get, you know, closer and closer. I'm just trying to be present and give the mommies as long and myself as much information as possible, as I'm also about to embark on this lactation journey. I'm so happy to have you back. Thank you for your time today. Joanne is back in the building.
I'm here.
She was out in the field selling coochie confidence for us.
I was in the field, Bianca. You know, I was in the field, girl. I was selling the beard oil. I was selling the yoni oils, the yoni steams, the yoni soaps. My bag was lighter than when I came in with. The people got the things.
Well, why?
So I'm happy that we're having a part two today because we barely got to scratch the surface in our last episode. And I feel like there's just so much more information that we, you know, need to get out there. So today I want to start with your why behind, you know, what was your passion behind becoming a certified lactation consultant? Also want to talk about the organization Chocolate Milk Cafe that you're a part of and how other women can, you know, use this resource as an ally for their lactation journeys. I want to get into the breastfeeding myths and things like that, about storing breast milk and all that good stuff. So, but we're very big on the whys in our community, because, you know, a lot of us started our brands off of healing ourselves or just being passionate about the women in our community and helping and uplifting them. So what inspired you to become a lactation counselor as opposed to maybe a doula or a midwife?
That's a good question. So I believe I spoke about this in the last episode. I'm a know-it-all and I like to be right. And I took the training just so that I can have information so I can like tell people like, poo-poo, I know this information, leave me alone, right? Let me breastfeed my child in peace, because everybody was just like killing me with their misinformation and their advice and unsolicited information. It was so annoying. So I, like, the lactation piece was something that I felt like I was failing at. I felt like I was failing at breastfeeding because of the challenges that we had, like all the plug ducts. I felt that I was failing because I gave my son formula, because what I kept hearing, you know, from everybody was like, you got to breastfeed. But then at the same time, you know, if you run into a problem, you got to stop. So I was like, which one is it, right? It was like I was filled with a lot of guilt, so much guilt. I was being abused by my mother, narcissistic abuse. So that was like really eating away at me, at my confidence, at my mental health. I developed postpartum anxiety. I wasn't in a good place at all. And I wasn't in a place to start a business. Like when I took the training, it wasn't to start a business at all. But I believe I mentioned in the last episode, like after George Floyd died, it was like a combination of it was a storm of different events. So George Floyd died. I was still, you know, feeling the guilt with in my head, failing breastfeeding journey. I was terminated from my job in 2018, like during my pregnancy. And that also had a really negative effect on me. And I was like really scared to go back to work. I was really scared to go back into the environment that caused me a lot of pain and suffering, you know, because it was like that last job was a lot. It was a night job.
How did you balance your mental health, Janice?
Say it again.
How did you balance your mental health during that time?
So I was a part of I had a nurse from the Nurse Family Partnership. So it's a service for first-time moms. Like, you enroll by, I want to say, your 28th week of pregnancy. And a nurse starts coming to your house to check on, you know, your health, your blood pressure, how you're doing, helping you prepare for the baby. And then when the baby comes, they will come, like, every week, every 2 weeks to check on you. And it was the nurse who realized that I wasn't doing well mentally, based on my fears, based on what I was describing. Like, for instance, I couldn't go by a window with my son. At that time, I lived on the eighth floor. Just standing by the window filled me with panic because I thought my son was going to fall out the window. Mm. So that's not rational fear. You know, yes, fear is rational, irrational. It was very irrational. And then other symptoms that she, you know, was like, I'm going to get you connected with the social worker. So it took me like 3 months to get an appointment with the social worker because she was so busy. So I finally got an appointment, and we started seeing each other like every week, every 2 weeks. She had recommended going on medication, but that clinic didn't, you know, give medication to people who were breastfeeding. So I had to like switch and go somewhere else to get the medication management. So it took me a long, long, long time to get the help that I needed to manage the mental health issues I was experiencing.
Did you always know what you needed? Like, what did you, like, could you always pinpoint exactly what support you needed, or was it something that you needed to develop in conversation with other women or other professionals?
I had no idea what I needed. I knew I needed food because I was hungry. I knew I needed people to like clean and cook and this and that. But when I say my first like few months of my child was just so effed up. oh God, I actually wrote a blog post about this, about maternal narcissism and its effects on breastfeeding. And
is bringing up some things for you.
It is.
This is a safe place to release it.
I want to because it's important, because a lot of women go through this and they don't realize, they don't know how to identify it.
It's not spoken about enough either.
It's so taboo to describe your mother being a certain way when, you know, you see everybody else's mother being wonderful and supportive.
Right.
Yeah.
So also,
in this community, we don't give it language enough. You know, we don't give it a language. We don't give it a sound. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, even when I ask them, did you know what you needed? A lot of us don't. We sense it, but we can't give it a language. So just know that you're not alone. And I'm just so proud that you made it out. And I'm just so you know, baffled and taken aback by your bravery, because not only did you see a disparity for yourself, but you created a lane for other women.
Yeah.
And that is, I believe that's why we connected. I really believe that, because we are so attached to our why. We're so passionate about what we do and who we do it for. And I believe that who we are seeking out is seeking us too. And they're going to find this, and they're going to feel that comfort in your voice over the pod, and they're going to connect with you and already know you when they meet you. So you're giving them an introduction before they even get a chance to, you know, step into the space.
Because I get it. I get what most women go through, and probably from a different level, from my mom, my own mother, because long, long, long story short, my mom was upset with me, very upset, because I told her that she did something and overstepped my boundaries. I got upset, told her I'm upset because XYZ, and then she got upset at me because how dare you. And when my son was 9 days old, sent my husband and I an email saying that she is going to sell the co-op where that she owns that we live in. So that was her retaliating. That was her throwing back the hurt that she was feeling back onto us.
So this is after you lost your job. This is right when the baby was born. This is when you're really just mapping out where you are mentally. You're with your partner. Your body's changing. Mm-hmm. And your mom says you can no longer live there. Mm-hmm. And then the strain because you're becoming...
All because you spoke your truth.
Yeah, because I spoke up.
And I feel like, you know, people of a certain generation, it's really hard for them to take accountability.
And she's Jamaican.
Right. Yes. And that's just a layer, like a top layer.
Well, the cultural construct.
Yeah. So it's like, how dare you when, you know.
I'm here just to help you. I'm here. I'm helping you. I did this for you. I did that for you. You know, like, how dare you say I did something when in my mind, I didn't. Mind you, on my healing journey, I understand exactly why my mom is the way she is. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't excuse the hurt that was levied on me, right? So I had to, like, hold true to my emotions and what I was feeling because I never had that opportunity. My mom's feelings were always at the forefront. We had to protect her feelings. We had to protect the family secrets.
But then it's like who's protecting your feelings and how we do healing to pass it down to your children, you know? And we've had mother wounds, Coochie Conversations on IG Live, and we'll probably do a pod on it as well. Because a lot of moms of a certain generation, like I said, they don't know how to be told that something, that they did something wrong to where it hurt us or hold themselves accountable.
My mom actually asked me, what's accountability? How do you hold somebody accountable? She didn't know what accountability was.
I find that, I don't know if it makes sense to any of you, but it's a journey of motherhood. It starts when you're in gestation that you start to transform into a modified version of what you desired motherhood looked like. And I find myself, and it's not an overcompensation thing. I'm very, very big on providing my daughter the things that I've never had. Mm. And we've had, and we come from a generation, I think we're all the same age group where our older and Caribbean parents or brown or hued parents, they confuse discipline for obedience. And, you know, and respect for obedience, like they interchange those three a lot.
Taught to not be seen, like to be seen and not heard, and then that gets passed down. Do you know what I mean? Even in the medical field, now we're going into these hospitals and we're just so used to being seen and not heard, but it really starts.
Yes,
you know.
And Nash said it best last episode when she was talking about the epigenetics of, like, you know, the pathology of it. And we may not have connected to that far down, but we're connected to our parents, grandparents, and their parents. So how we were raised is very triggering and polarizing. So there's no coincidence that you had to make a stance with your mom as soon as your baby was born. And it was around that time that she stripped you of what she naturally should provide for you, which was safety and covering. So I don't know about you, but I've already forgive her because I understand that dynamic. I understand that.
I forgive her.
It made you better. You know, you pivoted, you know, you took your settlement and you built a monument. So I think that everything happened for a reason, and it was more to shine light on your position. You know, I'm just so proud of you for pushing through, Janice.
Like, I say my son saved me.
Yeah.
I feel like becoming a parent really teaches you how to exert your boundaries with family, with parents, with friends. I've learned a lot on this journey as far
and with time.
Yeah. Mm. You know, like taking your energy back and speaking up for yourself.
Yes, that's exactly what I did. I took my energies back and I spoke up for myself and I continue to speak up for myself.
Mm-hmm. And when somebody's not used to you doing that, it's like, well, what?
Yes. Yes, because I was a sweet, quiet Janice, you know, her little girl, her best friend.
You know what's so crazy? I just had a download that when your voice and your creativity is stifled at a young age and you break out of that, you kind of phased into the advocacy for others.
Oh. Yeah.
And Janice, I think that's why. I'm not explaining your why. Please proceed.
Yeah.
Map out this timeline for me. This is profound. So right when your body was changing, your life was changing, your environment was changing, your relationship was changing, and your motherhood, your mother wound was being exploited.
Right.
What happened next?
What happened next was I went no contact with her for several weeks. I prioritized my healing and my son. And that was the big change because of what happened, where I was, you know, explaining about, you should read my blog post. It's horrific.
Yes.
Yeah. What I was, you know, saying that she did, it was really bad. I had to take a break from her and work on myself and my son because of what she did. I lost all trust in her. All the nice bubbly feelings I had towards my mother evaporated around that time. I started seeing her differently, not necessarily in a negative way, but just differently, that, you know, me and like my siblings and like aunts and uncles, we've had her on a pedestal all these years. And then like my eyes was opened up. I was like, wait, she is actually, she's not God.
Is that when she became human to you?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's when I was able to see her flaws, able to understand where, you know, like how she, well, that was the beginning of how I started to understand where she, you know, came to be. I actually, oh, right. So because of the abuse that my mother levied on my sister, and like, I have a younger sister who's 2.5 years younger than me. We were best friends. Like, we were so close growing up. And then our mother manipulations and triangulations and gaslighting separated us.
Mm-hmm.
And I got my sister back because of what my mom did to me.
Mm.
I got my sister back.
It wasn't a loss, it was a gain.
It was a gain.
You know, because sisterhood is shadow work. So I hope that understanding why the wedge was born, and the wedge and who implemented the wedge, and the reasoning behind it, I hope that it like just forged a path of understanding and an unbreakable communication. I'm in the season with my siblings where no matter what, we have to communicate. The good, the bad, the ugly. It's not tea. It's not gossip. You're dropping a pin emotionally, because sisterhood is shadow work, and we have to support each other, especially from the bloodline. I know things are weird, and you know there are different family dynamics that happen and change and shifts. But if you have the chance to make amends, and if you have the opportunity to correct some things, go for it.
Right.
Yeah. Go for it full throttle, because we need sisterhood. Sisterhood is what keeps me alive. It's my business model, you know.
Was your sister there to support you in ways that your mom wasn't?
Yeah, my sister, she actually lost her job. No, it's even worse. So I said, we're from the Bronx, right? My sister moved to Albany for a new job and lost that job.
Shit, that's a hike.
Right. So then, because, you know, she was jobless, she was always down in the Bronx with us, and she was like really important, like to help my husband and I, you know, take care of our kids. But so she was
see here. How things work. Like, yeah. She lost that job so that she could be there for you. In ways that your mom wasn't there for you.
Right.
Postpartum period.
And you know, the crazy part is my mom lived 10 minutes walk away from where I was living. 10 minutes walk down the road.
I think that's even, that makes the story even sweeter, because even in her proximity, she couldn't even get close to you.
Right.
Because mentally you had already detached yourself.
Oh yeah.
You already shattered that monument.
You cut that cord, like.
Yeah, it was cut. Yeah. Because my mom always talked about, oh, we're still attached at the umbilical cord. She always said that. She always said that. She actually told me one time, you know, I love you most in the world. I'm the one who loves you the most. Mind you, I was already married. I have my husband. How can you love me most when you don't even know me in ways that my husband knows me.
Right.
So
it was just, you don't allow yourself to know me in that way. Because yeah. then it might come off as me being disrespectful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Or okay. Ungrateful. So we're in the season of okay. You're jobless. Your sister's jobless, and the baby's here. Your husband is watching all of you.
Yeah.
Are you guys packing boxes at this point?
We started. Oh my goodness.
So she was really serious.
Oh yeah, and she messaged me like, "Oh, I'm the realtor is going to come." XYZ date, so you know, make sure the place is tidied up, mind you, with a brand new baby and boxes opening from, you know. So my husband was like, he's like, I guess we gotta move. And I was like, huh? I woke up, I was like, huh? So yeah, your mom evicted us. I was like, okay. And we just went to work. So he called up his cousin, was like, yo, let's go to U-Haul store, get some boxes. We were on the road going to rental places. And I was at risk for engorgement and mastitis, which is a breast infection, because I was on the road. It's winter time. Okay. This is March, right? Cause I gave birth in February. So it's slippery, there's snow, blah, blah, blah. And we're out, you know, hustling, looking for an apartment.
You shouldn't have been in the cold at all.
Thank you. With a breastfed baby who wasn't even being breastfed properly because...
And the milk was just getting, like, stuck.
No, I was engorged. I had a lot of milk and wasn't managing it properly. Didn't know how to manage it. So my son was getting formula because I wasn't comfortable feeding outside at that point. I was having pain and I wasn't comfortable with my breasts exposed. So, you know, he was getting a lot of formula. I wasn't managing that milk. And just engorgement, just, you know, just wasn't...
A lot of pain.
A lot of pain, a lot of physical and mental anguish, you know? And us trying to find a new place to live wasn't easy because I didn't have a job, right? I didn't have any paychecks. My husband is also a small business owner. He owns a graphic design agency. He does websites, logos, branding, and identity for small to medium-sized businesses. And it's kind of like a if you're a small business and you're not getting checks, rental places don't really look at you.
They want like triple deposit,
right?
You know, get your bank statement
for funds. They want you got a construct for business owners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So we didn't get a place, and then like. My mom admitted to me, she was trying to gaslight me like, oh, well, you know, it takes a while for the co-op to sell. I didn't mean for you to move out right now. And she said to me, I only did it to scare you.
Wow. So you didn't even care about, she didn't care about your mental well-being, how you just had a baby, none of that. It's solely a scare tactic.
Yeah, it was a scare me. And I was like, well, guess what? It worked.
Right.
I'm scared of you per se, but like, as I said, I lost the trust.
Yeah. And the threat of instability is so, it's so damaging. And that's very violent. That's emotional violence. It's emotional violence.
It's violent. I say it's terroristic. It was because terrorists instill fear in people.
Absolutely. And they don't, and they play with boundaries.
Oh, she boundaries what?
Exert her power.
I cannot wait to read this blog post.
Yes.
I know it's juicy.
We're going to put it in.
And you have to come back for the mother wounds episode because there's an unspoken conversation about how brown mothers are unpoliced. Mm-hmm. They shape society and they know that they can. And they're the most violent terrorists in America. I believe mothers are the most violent terrorists in America because they have the power to heal and they have the power to destroy.
Right. And they'll tell you that I brought you in this world. I take you out of it. I feel like that's you only hear that from black mom.
But how can you weaponize your God-given right and your ability? Like, I didn't ask to be here. You got food on the table. That is not a presence. That is that.
You got clothes. You got a place to live.
That is survival. And then you're teaching people how to get in survival mode. Like, these are the things that are valued. These are the things. And then you're teaching them control tactics. Like, if I have these things, I'm in control. You know? And it's like, your mom, like,
you're becoming a mother. Control. Like, she just do that. She has upper hand.
You were becoming a mom. You were a wife and a mother, and that you couldn't top her with authority. So she had to make sure she reminded you that there was somebody over you.
Yes, absolutely. It is. It was nuts, and it made my husband and I realize how vulnerable we were living in her place.
Never again.
But you know what?
What point did the settlement come in for in the time?
Oh yeah, I got my. Oh, I mentioned the settlement. Oh yeah, I settled.
I listened to the episode like 10 times.
I settled with my employer. You know, so yes. Legally I can't say XYZ.
That's fine.
We got the I say we because it's my husband and I. Mm-hmm. We got the money and an undisclosed amount. Maybe when my son was 3 months old.
Were you able to float and leverage that to get something different?
So I used some of that money to pay for my lactation counselor training.
I love that. I was going to ask about that. But wait, how did you end up living with this ailment?
Say it again?
Where did you end up living before you the lactation coach thing?
Well, I was still at my mom's place. We were still at my mom's place because we had nowhere else to go.
I'm going to ask again. Sorry. Okay. So where did you end up living after the settlement? But I put it on D&D. She is very persistent. I'm going to text her while I try again. So where did you guys end up living after the settlement?
We were still living in the same place. We had nowhere to go. It was a very uncomfortable situation for us. My mom would, come over and I'm here playing nice, trying to allow her to see her grandchild because she told me she has grandparent rights and I have no, and she's not going to hurt my child. And I have no rights to keep my child away from her.
Hurting your child is also taking away a roof over its head, though.
Right.
I have a very funny feeling that your mother knows how to fry breadfruit to perfection.
I don't know if she ever did that
because the way she's carrying on.
Yo, my mom can cook down. She can cook a mean rice and peas and a mean stew peas and Jamaican soup and
see. But I'm telling you, I know she know how to cook because look at this.
She's still 10 minutes away because I need some food.
I'm going to tell you a secret. I'm actually living 5 minutes away from her right now.
No?
She doesn't know.
Oh, wow.
Well, she might know because she has my social security number. So she probably already stalked me and everything.
So now I'm even closer and I still don't talk to you.
Yeah. You're well within your right. I think I'm so glad that the journey ended up with you strengthening your boundaries because
it led for
you to build and foster community for other women. Okay, so we're getting there. So you got the settlement, okay?
Yeah. No, that's not what happened. No, we stayed there for the next 4 years.
Oh, how was that for you mentally?
Awkward. And it wasn't good because my mom, because we were under her roof still. It wasn't good mentally.
So how were you able to concentrate on building your brand?
So by this time, you were a certified lactation counselor.
Yeah, in 2019, I got a certification that September. George Floyd died the following year. And I used some more of my money to pay for a... So Annie Frisbee is a badass in the lactation field. She's an IBCLC, and she's really good at the business end of that. So she has a company called Paperless Lactation, and she was selling. She still sells toolkits. So it's basically how to establish a lactation business without you doing the work, the groundwork yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that helped me a lot. And I decided I'm going to start my business. And I started off really strong. I was still in contact with my mom, here and there. Mm-hmm. Still saw each other. She still saw my son. But I remember this conversation. We went to the Botanical Gardens together, me, her, and my son. Because, of course, I'm still trying to be the good daughter, trying to manage my needs of a mother and her needs of a grandmother, And this was... it's a funny thing. I incorporated my business on her birthday, July 22nd, 2020. and July, August, September. So this 2 months later, we were at the Botanical Gardens, and she asked me, so in such a begrudging way, so you get any business yet? You get any clients yet? Like that. And that messed me up. Because obviously I didn't get any clients yet.
It's right. been 2 months. And it's so tender. Like, that's why I'm like, entrepreneurship is so ghetto.
And
we don't need the outside pressure either.
Especially obviously, when I feel like you don't believe in me. Because that's...
Right. Because she doesn't believe in entrepreneurship, period.
Right.
But my mom is a registered nurse. You know, the whole Jamaica, everybody in Jamaica is a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that gave us stability in the 1990s.
Right. They don't know anything about
and that's the only way. And that's she's not dog way. Because she got a consistent paycheck.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
No, this episode is loud.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So, you know, she was more proud when I was able to work in my field and had a job, a consistent job, right? And even my husband, she had mentioned to my sister one time, oh, my husband's unemployed because he has his own business. And like nothing changed with the pandemic. My husband still had a business, but she had mentioned, oh, because Janice Kenson and, you know, her niece are unemployed, she got to work more hours at the hospital. And I'm like, but my husband's not employed though. But that's how she viewed entrepreneurship. Okay, cool. So that little statement like messed me up for a bit, but I realized, okay, I can't really talk to her about this. So that was September. And it was like, I put in so much work into building and establishing my business because it was like, I was proven to her that, hey, look at me, I can do it.
Right.
Look at me, mom, you know? And I push myself so hard that just a few months later, so September, October, November, December, January, February, 5 months later, I developed depression. Didn't know I was depressed and started having like suicidal ideation. I had a therapist at this time, but maybe this new therapist, we were brand new. We had just started working together a couple of weeks ago, basically. And she didn't understand like how sick I was.
Mm.
And
how old did you spend at this time?
Almost 9 months at that point, right?
No, he's over a year at this point. He was born February 2019, and this was February 2021. Yeah, 2021. So he had just turned two, and I was breastfeeding him. And this was a part of the reason why I got so sick, because he was breastfeeding like frequently, day and night. Like,
but you weren't taking care of yourself.
I wasn't taking care of myself. And my son has special needs and couldn't communicate.
I was going to ask, at what age did he get a diagnosis?
19 months. So right before I got depressed, realized, you know, he has special needs, started therapy. He started receiving therapy in the home. I was going to my mental health appointment. No, actually, I had a break from my mental health appointments because I had a new therapist.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like a break.
How did your mom receive that he's on the spectrum? Like, how did she receive that?
She downplayed my feelings completely. Oh, you'll be okay because he's gonna get services, and had nothing to do with like how I was feeling. I was trying to explain to her like, my feelings, and that was completely brushed away.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, again, I'm still here trying to like, hey, mom, you know, please look at me, please support me. You know, I'm still crying for her
while you're producing milk.
Yeah, you know. And so depression struck, and I consider myself a smart person, so I was like, okay, cognitively I know I can beat this, you know, I'll be fine. Then I was damn depressed, and I wanted to throw myself down the stairs one day. I wanted to end my life. I wanted to slash my wrists and bleed out. And I knew it wasn't good. And I was trying to tell my husband, hey, I'm not well. I'm like yelling, I'm screaming, I'm pounding the walls. I'm like, I'm not good. Nobody's hearing me. And one day in March 4th, that was actually so funny because my baby was due March 4th. March 4th, I went outside, like, I need to buy this, I need to buy that, I need to buy this. Went to Walgreens on Fordham Road, and I got into Walgreens, and it's, like, packed. Mad people. I go into the next line, it's packed. And it's still COVID, right? So I have my mask on, you know. And it's, like, I can't do this. So I got into a panic, and I went outside to get air because I had learned about meditation. I was learning to meditate at this point. I have the Calm app. I had the Calm app on, and I was breathing, but still not really breathing. And it was like my peripheral vision just got like this. Yeah, it was like I couldn't talk. Like, it's like my speech kind of like went. It was starting to slow down.
Diminished.
It was diminished. I felt I was frozen. I was in a panic. I was frozen. My muscles were tense, and I couldn't move. So I was standing outside of Walgreens. Right next door is a shop that they sell dresses, like prom dresses, and I couldn't move. And this time it was 6:30 because that's when the store closes. It was 6:30, and they were pulling down. They were trying to pull down the crate. Mm-hmm. And they were like, "Oh, ma'am, can you move?" And I was saying, "I can't move. I literally cannot move." And I was like, "Okay, well, my husband's home with our son. It's hard for him to come out. Who else do I call? My sister's back in Albany. I didn't have anybody else to call. I called 311 because I was like, the hell, if I call 911, police are going to come. They're going to shoot me." Mm-hmm. Right? So I was still in that awareness that I'm a black person. One.
Yeah.
You know, so I called 311. I was like, "Can you send an ambulance? Because I cannot move." Ambulance came. The AMT came out, and they were like, they had to like physically move me onto the stretcher because my muscles were locked. And they were like, "Well, what do you want to do? Which hospital do you want to go to?" And I was like, "Take me to XYZ hospital where my mother-in-law works." Went to that hospital, and I didn't leave the hospital until 6 days later.
Was it cold outside?
It was a bit cold. Yeah, it was a bit cold.
So what was your diagnosis?
So I had, what do you call it? Major depressive disorder with like anxiety. I can't remember the terminology. Like with anxiety, dementia or something like that. And that was being in the mental hospital was no joke.
And away from the baby.
Right. Yeah. How were you able to feed him? Well, you went back to the formula.
Right. He was 2 at this point. So he was already eating solids and he was having like almond milk, soy milk, you know, things like that. And I was trying to maintain my milk supply. The hospital, somebody in lactation gave me a hand pump, and I was trying to express my milk. They tried to give me a private room, but the room was connected. The bathroom was a shared bathroom that had somebody else on the opposite side. But then, like, she broke down the door. She broke down her door, like, pulled it off the door frame because she was a big girl. And she, Bianca, your face. She said she was schizoaffective, and she was, it was not good. I remember like being in my bed, like this, like hearing her banging down the door. And so that door came down, and then they moved me into another room with another person. So I had no privacy. I'm here trying to hand express my milk, and I was throwing my milk out. Yeah.
You were just trying to get it out.
I was trying to keep up my supply for my son. Right. Yeah. Because it would have been too much of a logistical nightmare to like, oh, get a fridge. No, it's a mental unit. You can't have things, you know, like, oh, where are they going to store my milk? And I was like, you know what? That's too much work. I'm here like trying to recover. I'm here just trying to like get my bearings. I'm crying, like, you know, like 2 days straight, I'm crying and I'm trying to sleep and I was like exhausted and like here trying to manage like my milk production. Like,
right.
But I just
want you to know that a lot of the things you're expressing, it happens in chunks and in waves in so many women right when they're giving birth, like right when their body is changing. So I just want to thank you again for being so transparent because yes. I feel so seen. I feel yeah. so seen. And this is why Bianca created a platform like this for us to yeah. have these conversations because women are alone in silence. Like yeah. the way you are balled up in that bed, women are balled up in their homes, they're yeah. balled up in their marriages, and they're like, and they're fighting between defeatings, you know? So I just thank you so much for shedding light on the mentality that behind the why.
Yeah.
You know, you broke.
Oh, I broke. That was
you
my
broke
rock.
To rebuild.
That was my rock bottom. That was literally my rock bottom.
Your rock bottom is not strange. I'm telling you, it's more common than you would like to know. Mm. And you know, we don't talk about these things because we don't want to scare people or we're bound by shame. You know, like I'm embarrassed that I was that low. But look what you've created. Look what you've built for women. You've built community. You are the safe place for women that you didn't find, you know? Like you created something for others that you didn't have for yourself. And that takes so much grit and it takes so much bravery.
It's a lot of work.
With children, children are being fed and nourished and, you know what I mean? Because their mothers are learning from you. You are rebuilding you and you are restoring breastfeeding. For Black women,
taking the bricks that were thrown at you and actually building,
yeah,
building something with it.
Yeah, you're doing the work.
The day that I was discharged from the hospital, I had a really frank conversation with my mom. I don't cuss, you know. I still have that respect. I don't cuss on nobody, you know. My elders.
Wait, I'm licking?
I told her. I talked to her very calmly. And said, "Mom. Mommy, I think you're a narcissist. The family, we've been talking about you behind your back. We don't think, you know, that things are good. You know, this is toxic." And I told her, I said, the only way that I can continue a relationship with you is if you go to therapy. And she said, "Well, I don't think therapy is good for me. Or I don't think I need therapy." So I said, "Well, that's the end of our relationship," because I was just completely done with the back and forth and the emails mm-hmm. and all the emotional energies I was, you know, expending on her to get her to understand me, to get her to see me, to listen to me. You know, I was done. So I got out of the hospital, like, you know, the first full week of March, and April 2nd, 2021, I went no contact with my mother. And I had to do that because I had to figure out who Janice was.
Yeah.
Who am I as a business owner? Who am I as a mother, as a wife, as a friend? Mm-hmm. And I was reborn as cheesy.
I love
that
you lost yourself to find yourself. I think that is so profound. And a lot of women don't take the time to discover themselves over again during crisis like that. Like they get down, they lay down, you know? Mm. I know people that don't really uprise to the occasion when challenges face them. I know a few people that I lost along the way. You know, we've lost some comrades in this fight for women where they just like the circumstances and they just, "Oh, this is what's happening. Oh.
Oh my God." Like wow, I never thought about that because I just felt like for my kid, I had to do this. I felt like pushed. I felt driven that I had to be on in order to reach my goals of establishing JC Lactation Counseling, right? I had to do this. I had to break away from my mother and sort out myself and be confident in my brand and my business.
Mm-hmm. So when you found yourself, your brand found its identity.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the mission statement at JC Lactation Consultation.
So my mission statement kind of evolved. And my goal my mission of my company is to provide clarity and reassurance.
Mm.
I don't sell breastfeeding. I don't sell this myth of, you know, oh, this wonderful journey, this experience of, you know, breastfeeding and you know, challenge free. I don't sell that. I sell clarity and reassurance because there's so much misinformation out there. And there's so much, and there's a lack of support and not enough of people giving that information and that literally the reassurance that, hey, you're doing well. Your baby is pooping. Your baby is peeing. Your milk is enough. We don't get that reassurance. So that's what I provide. I'm curious about, you know, about the why. I'm also curious about the whys behind each mom and each family, you know, like how, you know, you're here. Why are you here? So I really dig deep into like their background. I'm very curious about that. I'm so empathetic. I get literally get into their shoes and like put myself in their place and I feel what they're feeling. I'm crying with them.
That's more than a consultation.
It is.
It's a partnership.
Mm-hmm. It is a partnership. And I'm relatable because my
so mission very much so
is, you know, Black women, you know, the African diaspora, that's my target audience. And we need to know that, hey, there's other Black women who's been through this. Breastfeed too, you know.
You're closing the disparity. You're closing the gap.
Yep.
You better close the gap, Janice.
I created a tagline. Ending breastfeeding disparities one consult at a time.
That's about it, and that's all.
Yeah, like
I'm gonna come behind you one city at a time.
One city. At a time. Oh my God. Right? That's simply my mission. Just like to be
changing lives one yoni at a time. So.
One yoni at a time. You know,
I think that alignment and that connection to your why is what's gonna connect the mothers to their babies.
Absolutely.
And as long as we are firm and true in our purpose, we can just spark a match and catch fire for all the women to be inspired. Like something that you're passionate about can help grow a community. And I know there's so many business models that focus on profit first. And I get that, you know, profit over everything for some things. But when you're doing work like this that takes integrity, that's service based, there's a provision that comes with it and it comes from within.
Yeah.
It's not a tangible provision. It's a spiritual provision. And the fact that you, I don't know if you heard it, but I was asking these questions because I'm about to make it all make sense. I'm very spiritual. So the fact that you made room in your life, but you're not removing your mother. You just made room in your life for nature to nurture you.
Yeah.
That, so you were mothered in your own natural way. Spirit nurtured you.
I have mothered myself. I am mothering myself. I am my own mother.
You are your own mother.
Oh my goodness.
And when you, and the fact that you were appointed to usher women into motherhood, and you're teaching them that you don't need any outside resources, you're fortifying them to say you are a mother and you are qualified and your body is qualified.
Yes.
I think that's so profound. Every single thing you've experienced has brought you to this beautiful moment, to this beautiful career.
It's like simply, I don't want Black women to go through what I went through,
and they won't because you're here.
So simple.
You're on the job.
I don't even think your mom could have endured what you went through.
Yeah, she could never.
Oh no, she couldn't. Mm-mm. She couldn't have. It's like it's different, you know. She had my sister and I in the 80s in Jamaica, where, you know, there's family around. Like I had my older siblings and my aunts, and it was just people. My grandmother, my grandparents were around. It was just people. People were there.
Yeah, she had support.
She had support. She had lots of support.
The fact that you are teaching women that they are their own support system, and the way that you tangibly do that, because you're tackling the mental health, the spiritual, the physical, the nurturing. You know, like you're giving them the components to make very, very great decisions.
Yes.
I hope that every mother in the tri-state area, even abroad, you know, that they connect with you just to get there. I'm gonna send my sister your way. She's 7 months now.
Okay.
Yeah, she uses the products here. That's how
I sent her the link to the last episode and I asked her if she could come on today, but she's at work right now.
So. Yeah, oh, thank you. But yeah, that's how she got pregnant.
How?
BUBeauty.com. The products button, and that's how my sister got pregnant. That's how I'm having a niece because the product section on the website. And then Bianca is about to drop right now. I'm having a nephew in a few weeks because of the products on BUBeauty.com, specifically the Amrita oil. That's what did it.
Listen, disclaimer, use the products at your own risk.
Get a consultation with me first.
Right. And now we have a duo, okay? Once you get pregnant, we're gonna set you up so that your body can produce the milk. We got a package for you. Yep.
This is a package.
We're getting you pregnant and pumping.
Pregnant and pumping.
That's how we keep it. Pee.
And pussy pumping, you know?
Okay. So Janice, tell us now, like, what does an ideal client look like? What part of her pregnancy should she reach out to you? Mm-hmm. How do we get the awareness out? And I saw a flyer that you guys are having fundraiser. So tell us about JC Lactation, and then bring it full circle with the Chocolate Milk Cafe.
Yes, ma'am. So JC Lactation Counseling, we I provide home visits for moms in right now Bronx and Harlem, Inwood, Dyckman, because I'm close. I don't have a car. Uptown, right?
I don't have a car yet.
You're absolutely right. I don't have a car yet.
We're going to have a baby mobile real soon.
Yes. Yes. Yes, we will. And I am in, so I'm a certified lactation counselor and I'm in training right now to become an international board certified lactation consultant.
Abroad!
Yes, because our moms need clinical support.
Abroad! Right? She global.
I'm putting myself up there. Like, I am doing this work. I'm taking more. I got 2 more health science classes to take. I got 400 more clinical hours to get through. I'm doing this. I'm going all out because this is how important.
Go hard or go home.
Black breastfeeding is for me. I'm going back to school and taking this hard ass exam, studying and all this, right?
Because we matter.
We matter. Exactly. Yeah. We matter. Yeah. Yep. So in person, I go through, it's a conversation and it's, it's less of a consultation, it's more of a conversation, and like I'm holding you, you know, I'm supporting you, I'm empowering you. I'm literally just giving information, the good, the bad, the ugly, so that you can make decisions for your family. Nobody can tell you what to do. We already have the hospital systems doing this, right? Breaking us down, breaking our spirits.
Right.
And this is not, I'm not allowing this.
Right.
I'm not allowing this to happen. I went with okay, for instance, right, I'll give you an example of a recent consult I did. I do want to expand more into going to the hospitals, like the day after the person, you know, mom's birth, because especially at a hospital that's not baby friendly, and especially at a hospital that doesn't have lactation consultants on staff, because that's the thing, it's hospitals without lactation people on staff. Did a consult with a mom. Didn't have a prenatal appointment with her. I also have a prenatal appointment, which I would like preferably for people to start coming to in the second and third trimester.
Okay. So like the beginning.
Yeah. Like, you know, not, you know, right away, you know, you're still, you know, going through the vomit symbol or whatever, but when things get more solidified, when you figure out, what do you want for your child? Do you want to combination feed? Do you want to exclusively breastfeed? You know, what do you do? You kind of get more of those ideas, like, you know, your second and third trimester. So that's where I really want to start the breastfeeding conversation from as early as possible. So since this mom didn't have the breastfeeding conversation, which I call it prenatal onboarding, because I'm onboarding people so that we can take this journey together, so I can be supportive on your journey.
Right. I love that you said onboarding. When you said the last episode, I really, really appreciate that because it's the beginning of a journey.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's a private, personalized breastfeeding class, right? Tackling, you know, what you need to know now when your baby is about to come. So I don't get into the whole, like, you know, the whole spectrum of breastfeeding or what things could look like. It's about, like, what can go wrong, you know, what to look out for, how you know your baby's getting enough. It's, like, very specific and targeted into what you need to know now, right? Mm-hmm. So I didn't have this conversation with the mom. So I'm in the hospital, and I'm like, okay, you had a C-section and nobody help you latch the baby on. Where's your breast pump? You have no breast pump?
Right.
I grabbed dad and I was like, let's go. Let's take a walk. Walk to the nurse's station. I was like, can we get a breast pump for patient in this room? Oh, her nurse is on break, blah, 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 blah. I was like, I said again, I stood back straight, looked them dead in the face. And I said, can I get a breast pump for so-and-so? And that's when they got up, got the breast pump. We went to the room together.
Because her nurse is on lunch or whatever. I can't get a breast pump right now.
Hello.
I love that. I guess I'm calling it advocacy. I'm calling
it
advocacy.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Some women, like, you know, like, and I saw a video the other day. I think my sister sent it to me. Was like, when a baby is born, their innate ability is to ask for help. And somewhere along the way, we got disparaged and we forget to ask for help. We forgot our natural being is like, I don't have enough of this. Can I have this? So the fact that a new mom in her fragility can lean on you to be the advocacy piece is so, so valuable.
No, because if her patient would have asked for the breast pump, they would have just said, oh, well, you got to wait for your nurse to get back.
Mm-hmm. You know, the crazy part, the worst part is, and why I was so upset and why I had to, like, keep my feelings to myself, is because just a few hours before I arrived, she was seen by a lactation consultant. She was seen by a whole RN,
IBCLC, the hospital appointed.
The hospital appointed person who just merely gave her
a booklet
and didn't give her any help. Didn't get her on the breast pump. So I got there, got her on the breast pump. She was like, she told me the same thing that I told myself, that I've heard so many women say, I don't have enough milk. I don't have milk. I'm not seeing anything. So I explained, you know, the colostrum. I explained, you know, what's normal, what you, you know, I explained all those things. And then I said, is it okay if I always ask for permission. Is it okay if I touch your breast? Is it okay if I demonstrate hand expression? Is it okay if I touch your child?
Yes.
So we have that happen to us all the time where our autonomy and our boundaries are crossed, you know, by healthcare providers. And I don't want to contribute to that trauma.
Right. Yeah.
So every step of the way I explain what I'm going to do, I ask for permission.
It's so crazy because that's why you went through what you went through. Every emotion that you're attaching to safety and is what you've experienced on your own. Like, I hear it. Everything you've experienced, but, like, that's why when you were talking, I was like, I was pinpointing things so we can tie it back later on. It was the instability in your relationship with your mom. It was the newness of being a mom. It was trying to support your partner but still trying to figure it out. It was a lot of things. To the fact that you tackled those things on a fundamental level and it became your system for your consultations.
For your consultations, for your clients.
You built your own system. You were your first lactation coach.
I was my first patient. I said, you know, like in math or n equals one. I was n equals one.
And that's how a lot of our businesses are created when it comes from, like, a passion or a purpose. We are always our first patients.
Mm-hmm. When we're in it for the right reasons.
Yeah, when you're in it for the right reasons. Exactly.
Yeah. You're on the right reasons.
If you wasn't doing this, like you said, you never did this to start a business out of it. You did this so you can know more information because you were so misguided. Mm-hmm. And you were able to flip this into, you know, a profitable business, but that's not what the fundamentals was.
Mm-mm.
You know,
the fundamental was people.
Absolutely.
I believe when you put people over profit, the posture and your purpose will always align you mm-hmm. with the compensation you need.
Yep.
Okay, so how did we get to the chocolate milk cafe? Yeah.
Right. So how I got into Chocolate Milk Cafe, I want to say 2021. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Like, so I got the hospital and I'm mm-hmm. healing up. I'm doing my therapy like once or twice a week at the group therapy. And I actually started a new job in November 2021. And this was a testament of how, it's not right, of how low I sunk. That's not right. That's not accurate. Of how scared I was, because I took a job where they only required 1 year's worth of experience, and I had 8-9 years experience at that time. But I wanted safety. I was looking for safety.
Entrepreneurship is ghetto.
I was looking for safety in the
And well, the consistency, the paycheck.
No, but for real though, I had gotten hired for this job right as the pandemic was about to undergo. So like the city shut down March 2020. Mm-hmm. I got hired in February 2020. So I was waiting for this job the whole time. Mm. So when they finally was like, oh, you can start working. I was like, okay, I don't want to work. I want to work in my business. But mm-hmm. I felt obligated to take this job that I was waiting for. And I was like, okay, it's a city job. You know, I'll be more protected, blah, blah, blah. It was so far from the truth. But anyway, so around this time when I was starting the new job, I also onboarded with Chocolate Milk Cafe, and I did my at that time it was 16 hours facilitator training, and I had already was going to the groups. I was getting acquainted with like LaShonda Dandrick. Shout out to LaShonda, because she was the first person ever who asked me, why don't you become an IBCLC? And I would say she inspired me, right?
Hey, Shonda girl.
LaShonda. That's
LaShonda. So found community.
I found community that I didn't have.
Right.
You know?
Well, you were your community for a long time.
And what exactly is Chocolate Milk Cafe?
So Chocolate Milk Cafe is Chocolate Milk Cafe National Incorporated is a nonprofit that we offer peer-to-peer support, breastfeeding support or lactation support to members of the African diaspora. So only Black people can join. because of our unique legacy. Because and of our specific
needs.
Our specific needs.
Our needs, our traumas.
Yes. You know, we create the sacred space so that we can come to a chapter meeting and be, you know, well, it's sacred because it's very hard to create completely safe spaces, right? Mm-hmm. But it's as safe as we can make it because of our strict adherence to our mission and to our rules. So we only allow people of the African diaspora to come to the meetings. We don't allow people to come and just observe.
No spectators.
Nope.
But we've been through that, right? We've our ancestors have been dragged up and down at freak shows and circuses and zoos. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sarah Barton.
Mm. Right. Mm. Right. I forgot his name. The man who's at Bronx Zoo right down the road from where I live. I gotta find him. Let me find his name. Oh my goodness. Bronx Zoo. His name was Oda Benga.
Mm.
He actually died in 1916 at the Bronx Zoo. They exhibited him in a iron cage like an ape.
Wow.
Okay. So because of our
for you guys. Yeah. But no, it's
because of our unique
the disparity is closing. And I feel like because of your unique experience, you can reach us uniquely, and that is what's gonna keep you special. Mm-hmm. And that's what's gonna keep you dominating in this field. And it's gonna create a legacy for you and all the women that you equip to do the same thing you do. So mm-hmm. are you in coaching now, Janice?
Wait, so, I want wait. No, I want her to keep finishing.
Oh, we're talking about cafe. Yeah, let me finish, you know, like explain, like, so our website is chocolatemilkcafe.org. You can click on locations. We have locations across the United States and one chapter in Toronto. Unfortunately, there's none in California.
Yet.
It'll
be my job.
Yeah, this chapter is being, you know, the roots are sprouting, you know, that they aren't established yet, but they're really sprouting all across the country.
And you said it's virtual, right?
It's virtual, yeah. It's still virtual.
Yes, you got to get on your Zoom.
It's still virtual because of this, you know, pandemic business. And anybody could join any chapter. So it doesn't matter where you live. You know, you could join a chapter in the East Coast and, you know, in Texas, Oklahoma. It doesn't matter. Okay. But it just be that the resources will be just be more tailored to the geographic area, right. You know? So when you join in, you know, the Zoom sheet, the Zoom registration that you fill out, we ask, you know, of course, your name and email address, like how old your baby is, if you're planning to lactate, if you're already lactating, if you're supporting a lactating person, and you have to certify that you agree to uphold the mission, uphold the rules, that you're a Black person and that you come in here with good intentions, right? Because you know the saying, not all skin folk is kinfolk, you know? Mm-hmm. And there are some people who, you know, are coming to, like, to try to take advantage or like to get data, you know, or things like that. So
they get their market reach because you're the target audience. So they want to, you know. I have a friend of mine who was, you know, she was on her breastfeeding journey. I'm at the tail end of trying to connect you guys because yesterday I saw her. She put a sponsored ad for formula because she's an influencer and a company reached out to her. They saw a disparity and they sent her formula. So she did her first ad with the formula and love and light. But I definitely want to connect you guys because maybe we can, you know, support her in giving her the full spectrum of options, you know, because, you know,
right.
We just want to make sure that she has a well-rounded decision. You know, I love opinions, but my favorite opinions are informed opinions. Exactly. I make decisions by, like, informed decisions.
So, hashtag informed is best.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes. So, yes. Mommy, Chocolate Milk Cafe, they're all over. We're expanding.
Yeah. And the space, Armitas, is so beautiful. Like, I love this, the energy that, you know, we all bring. We're all like, it's like really hard to put into words because we support each other. It is also moms who come who stop breastfeeding, who already transitioned to formula, and they still come because of this atmosphere that we have is so supportive.
It's a village.
It's a village. Literally, it's a village. You know,
and your children are all around the same age, growing together. I didn't breastfeed for long. I only breastfed for about maybe 8-9 months. It was under a year.
Let me rephrase that for you. You breastfed for 8 or 9 months.
Right, not for not long. Like,
not for only you breastfed for 8 or 9 months.
Thank you.
And that is badass. What are you talking about? That's a long time.
Some people only breastfeed for 2 months.
Not only, even if your baby got 1 day of milk, your baby got your milk.
Yeah, Bobby, the body did the job. I come from a I'm Hispanic, so I come from a lot of the constructs of, you know, the woman, the matriarch, she's the pillar of the home, you know, she's the motor, she keeps things going. So the more domesticated you are, the more docile you are, the more favorable you are to society, but above all, you are primed and proper to be housewifery. And a lot of those modalities come into the training and the fixation on, like, grooming the women. And so... culturally, when I gave birth, I was with her father, but I wasn't married, so that was a stack. And then, like, you know, I was really connected to my mom and my aunt and my grandma, so they were very involved in making sure that I was drinking my manzanilla, my chamomile tea. I was, you know, I was drinking things. I was wearing my faja every day, which was very itchy. I'm glad I snapped back, but it was itchy. Mm-hmm. And You know, it was a lot of following instructions. I didn't really listen to my own voice until I had to silence everything and isolate myself from everyone, because everyone had been a mom before me, everyone. And then I was just 20 years old, 21 years old. And I had to, like, I breastfed for 9 months and my daughter put the breast down. She was, she's very independent. She's a very thinking and free-spirited person. And when I think about that, because you know my daughter now, you kind of correlate, like she's very much a flower child. So she put down the breast at 9 months. She's like, thank you, girl. I'm on my own. So I adjusted to her natural wave of things. But by the time she got off the breast, I was giving her regular food anyway. So we kind of,
it worked out.
Yeah, we didn't do much formula. I had it because, you know, it was like, you know, it's essential in the home. And I mixed it in with my breast milk at some point. I mixed it in with the cereal in my breast milk, making smoothies. Like,
that's
to keep her full.
Those are questions that I wanted to ask. What do you feel about mixing breast milk with formula? And how do you feel about giving babies almond milk or oat milk as opposed to cow's milk?
Or hemp milk.
Yeah. So the first question that I believe, right, Bianca and I, we talked about this before, and I was at my internship and I actually asked, like, you know, my colleagues, like, hey, what are your thoughts on this? And we're all the same. We looked it up, we researched it, because we weren't exactly sure either. And we realized, okay, the breast milk and the formula should be separated. They shouldn't be in the same bottle, because formula and breast milk, formula is mixed and created in one certain way, and your milk is going to be managed in a different way. So if you combine the two, there's actually like a reaction that happens that increases the caloric content of the milk. I don't know the science, but we could put that information in the, you know, yeah. And then say, you know, your baby starts drinking the milk and you put the bottle down, because when you start giving your baby a bottle, you have to use it within 2 hours after the feed.
Right.
For breast milk, 2 hours. But with formula, you have to use it within 1 hour. So if your baby didn't finish that formula breast milk mix, you're wasting your milk, because you have to throw it out
in an hour
sooner, yeah, than you would have if you had to if you separate it out.
Right.
So if you know, there's lots of moms combination feed, right? And I'm of the stance that formula is not poison, right? There's some people in the breastfeeding world who are like, no formula, and that's beyond ridiculous, right? Moms and dads who are combination feeding, give the breast milk first and then the formula, and don't mix it in the bottle.
Because, you know, I'm very biased. Well, I'm very, like, not into formula, because I just feel like it just has a lot of crap in it that babies shouldn't have, like heavy metals and all that good stuff. But yeah, I just wanted to know about the combination feeding. And then I was hearing about some lady, I think she was out here, her baby got sick or something, and they were saying because she was giving the baby almond milk, which doesn't have enough nutrients as opposed to cow's milk. And I'm like,
interesting.
We'll try the cow, like the almond milk or the oat milk with cereal.
So what ages are you talking about? Because if a child is under 12 months old, they must be fed either human milk or formula.
I think it was after 12 months, like when you were able to give your baby like whole milk, but she opted to do something like almond milk, and they were saying that it doesn't have enough nutrients. But I know that it has the same amount of calcium in it as cow's milk.
All right, so this whole thing, this is why I'm so annoyed with the American Academy of Pediatrics and like the pediatric profession in America. Yeah. I'm gonna get real taboo right now, because there's no requirement that people need to stop breastfeeding at 12 months and give their babies cow milk. That doesn't make any sense. There's no need for that. If your child is nursing past 1 year, that is perfectly fine. If you want to introduce any type of, you know, milk whether that's from an animal or from plant-based milk, mm-hmm. is not a requirement. That is an option. You can if you want, right? If your baby tolerates it, it doesn't have to be done. And I don't know about the calcium and this and that, because, I mean, my son didn't drink cow's milk. And that was from my perspective of a lactation counselor and, like, you know, looking at things from an evolutionary standpoint. Like, when babies wean, they don't need to go to another species milk. They wean and that's it.
Right.
Yes.
You know? So... Right. And I was really annoyed with his pediatrician at his, like, 9-month appointment. Oh, you know, at 1 year you could, you know, start cow's milk. And I was like, no, we're not. I said, no, we're going to continue breastfeeding.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
As long as I'm producing, that's what we're going to keep doing.
Like, why is that your, like, first thing? As I'm saying, I hate this. I hate the standards of the pediatricians in this country. So, yeah, it's...
And what do you feel about... water? So I know technically you give baby water when it's about 6 months old. Start giving your baby water. Do you feel like, because I know some people that have, like, their child's like a year old and they still don't give her water, but they say, oh, well, you know, she gets water from the formula, the water that's in the formula. And I just don't feel like that's enough hydration at 1 year old that you're still getting just water that's in the formula.
Good question. And this brings up the thing that breast milk, human milk, and formula are very different,
mm-hmm.
right? And they have to be treated differently. And this is why we need to understand the properties and how they're handled and how it works in the system. So with, you know, human milk provides all the water a child needs, right? Mm-hmm. At 6 months, that's generally when people start. Well, lie. According to the pediatricians, you could start solids from 4 to 6 months, and that's BS. Because there's different theories about the leaky guts, and, you know, the iron stores are still, you know, going until 6 months. It's, basically, there are signs of readiness for when a baby's ready to eat, and a lot of these signs are not there at 4 months or 5 months old. A baby has to show all the signs of readiness before they start solids. And that could be 6 months. That could be 7 or 8 months.
And what would you say some of those signs would be?
So if they can sit up unsupported, they have good support with their neck, they can sit up. They lost the tongue thrust reflex. So if you put an object in, like, a 3-month-old's mouth, they're going to push it out their mouth.
Right.
They are developing the pincer grasp. So they're
picking up.
Start picking up. Yeah. Those are signs of readiness. This sure is another. There's others, but the baby has to have all the signs before they start solids, right?
Mm-hmm.
So even when your baby does start solids at 6 months, they don't need to get water. So your breast milk is going to be the primary source of nutrition for your 6, 7, 8 month old. I don't know if you've heard the saying, but, like, food before one is just for fun. But your milk is the primary source of nutrition for your under 1 year old.
So if my baby is under 1 year old, now she's 6 months, and I'm formula feeding, would I introduce water?
So I'll be honest, I'm not that familiar with formula feeding past a certain age, because I didn't, you know, do it myself, and, like, I have to do research on that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure from a clinical standpoint what folks do.
Do most people that are strictly formula feeding, do they feed for, like, a whole year or two or three or?
The formula is until 12 months, and after 12 months, they have this new thing. They have toddler formula and this and that. Some people do transition to cow's milk or, you know, oat milk or, you know, plant-based milk. And I think, so from what I heard, like, my in-laws are saying, like, oh, the baby's getting formula, you know, that they should get some water on top of that.
Right.
I've heard that, like, among, like, the, you know, the folks who've been around for a while already.
But it's weird that, like, some people just feel like their baby's getting enough water from the formula, especially after being a year old.
Yeah, I'm not completely. After a year, I think water should or can be introduced. I should be introduced.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's why we're having this conversation today.
Yeah, and it's good questions.
So as far as storage goes, do you store breast milk differently from formula? And like how long is, like you said, okay, so a formula has to be used within an hour, mm-hmm. room temperature. Breast milk has to be used within 2 hours room temperature. But once you put it in the refrigerator, what is it, or the freezer or the deep freezer or whatever, what is those storage times?
Right. So again, America sucks. So their recommendations for formula is so different from the UK and like European standards. So European standards, they say to make the bottle, each bottle is made at the time of the feeding, because formula, powdered formula, is not sterile, right? It needs to be boiled to 70 degrees Celsius or 158 degrees Fahrenheit in order to kill a common bacteria called Cyanobacter.
That's in the formula?
That's in the loose formula, because it's not sterile, and the formula companies do not put this on the label. They don't put their stuff is not sterile, and they don't put that the water needs to be boiled, right? Mm-hmm. So it's up to parents to figure this out on their own, which is unfortunate.
I see so many moms with the water in the water bottle, like in the bag, and they just make a quick bottle on the go. So
yeah.
That water's not 70 degrees. They're not carrying a thermos.
Right. So the water, you know, boil it and then wait about 5 minutes for the water to, the temperature to drop a little bit, like 5 minutes, and then you mix the formula. So that's how folks in the UK are making, or in Europe are making their formula. Every time they make a new batch. Here, they say that you can make... you can make the formula for the whole day. Like, say you make several bottles for the day, and you can put it in the refrigerator and use that within 24 hours.
But that's the powder milk.
The powder formula. Okay. Yeah.
And what about breast milk?
So that's the difference between what's being promoted in the UK and in the US. So I tell people, do your own research, see which one jives with you and your family, and what, you know, knowing what we know about the formula and its potentiality for bacterial growth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. With breast milk now, so if you pump some milk or you hand express milk, that milk is good for up to 4 hours at room temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Cool, right? And when you put it in the refrigerator now, there's some debate about, you know, how long, but this, some people say 4 days.
4 days.
In the refrigerator. And then when it goes into the freezer, some say 4 months. So like the 4-4-4, that's easy to remember.
Okay.
But I've seen, you know, like from the CDC's website, it's always good to go to a reputable.
People say like 6 months.
6 months, yep, is best, and like up to a year, is acceptable. Is okay to
do. And it, would you say that it depends on the temperature of your freezer or your refrigerator?
Yeah. So the refrigerator should be what 40 degrees Fahrenheit, and your freezer should be 0 degrees Fahrenheit. So if your temperatures are going above that, then you have some issues, because that's when food starts to grow bacteria, right? After when it's over 40 degrees. Mm. And my sister and I had this whole conversation about the deep freeze. Like, what is a deep freeze? Like, is it like
is it cooler, or right, is it deep because of the depth of the freezer?
Right. Because I'm coming from a background, because I used to do environmental health and safety at institutions of higher education. So I used to do laboratory safety, and I was always around, like, you know, centrifuges and, you know, minus 20 Celsius freezer. So when I'm thinking about deep freeze, I'm like, okay, maybe it's like a minus 20 or minus 80. And like when I look at the temperatures of the chest freezers, right, I don't see anything less than 0 degrees. I'm like,
you would see in a regular freezer.
Yes, it's the same temperature, but I guess
it's just
when
bigger. It's
deeper, when you could put stuff, it could hold. Maybe it does get colder at the bottom,
right? And it does like look like it forms like a lot of ice.
Right. So maybe the temperature is, you know,
different.
Yeah.
So what do you feel about plastic breast storage bags as opposed to like silicone, or, you know, people that want to be more environmentally friendly, or like glass bottles as opposed to plastic bottles?
I mean, it depends on your needs, you know. It depends on what you find important. So of course, you know, BPA was banned from bottles, but
you feel people just use that as a, like, they just put it on their products and it's really not
BPA free. Yeah. No, I think it's BPA free, but there's other plastics that they're using that can leach into whatever you have in the bottle, you know? Because, like, I mean, I have a plastic water bottle right here. Whatever is plastic is leaching in, you know?
Right. Because I drink out of a glass water bottle, and then we have silicone bottles. We have silicone bottles and we have plastic, and I think we have some glass bottles. And I was going to not use the plastic. Mm-hmm. I have the plastic storage bags, and I was looking into silicone. Mm-hmm. So just trying to give him, you know,
start
as best as I can.
So for me, as I said, from my environmental health and safety background, it's all about risk assessments. Right. And what you're comfortable, like what risk you are comfortable with accepting, you know, and there are different ways to mitigate risk. So, you know, if one's concern is plastic leaching, then yeah, absolutely using a silicone and glass would be, you know, the better alternative for you as a person. Right. So it depends, you know. And that's my thing. I don't tell folks what's best, because, like, you know, what products to use or whatever, because it's so subjective. It's such a personal thing.
Just tell it to the person.
Yeah, but of course, you know, certain things are, you know, like, okay, you know, freshly pumped milk up to 4 hours at room temperature. I must say that's going to be best because of the risk of bacterial growth, right? So there's certain things that are best. And even the refrigerator up to 4 days, I've heard 4 to 8 days. And that goes back to, you know, what risk you're willing to take.
So like, what if a baby does drink out of its bottle after, remember we said 2 hours?
Mm-hmm.
The baby started the bottle and you have 2 more hours before the milk, spoils?
Right. So that's
because its saliva is in the bottle.
Yep. And it's the propensity for bacterial growth. Mm. So it depends. Okay, so if you took out the milk from the fridge and your baby's drinking that, baby drank it all, baby didn't drink it all, you have up to 2 hours, right? If you took out milk from the freezer, you can keep that out on the countertop for 1 hour to 2 hours before it has to be tossed or used. And once it's from the freezer to the refrigerator, it can be in the refrigerator up to 24 hours. But you cannot ever refreeze milk that was already thawed out.
Mm.
That's so, fine. Yeah. Within 2 hours, you know, is when that milk has to be used.
Because of the bacteria. What about breastfeeding helps a woman lose weight? Because I find that a lot of women they lose like a substantial amount of weight after pregnancy from breastfeeding, as opposed to moms who just kind of like formula feed.
It's because they're starving. It's because
I went back to a size 28 because I was hungry.
It's because you're hungry. Yeah, it's not.
And now I'm comfortably a 32, and I'm gonna stay right here. Like, I mean, like,
Because I think, you know, I don't think women realize that, like, they have to kind of eat the same way they were eating during their pregnancy, in their postpartum, you know, postnatal phase, just for to have energy.
It's not a flex. The whole, oh, lose, you know, breastfeed to lose weight. That's not healthy.
Yeah, yeah. I almost died. Like, I was amazing.
Everybody's like, oh, you're going to breastfeed. You're going to lose weight. I'm like, okay.
Oh, I lost so much weight.
I don't know. Maybe I'm an alien, but like from when I had my daughter, from even before that, I was never big on like body image or anything. Like, it is what it is. I was always that type. Like, I was always satisfied with my body, and it was society. Like, it was like, oh, you look like you're breastfeeding. Oh, like, oh, like, you know what I mean? Like, it was just the people outward opinion that made me think that something was going on internally that really wasn't happening at all. My body was just adjusting to the person of my body.
At my 6-week visit to my OBGYN, I remember the nurse weighed me. She was like, oh, you lost a lot of weight.
Like, and it's a good thing.
Like it's a good thing.
It's after the baby.
Yeah. You know, because 6 weeks, oh, yeah, you know, like, after all hell is breaking loose and, you know, you're ready to, like, die and stuff.
Because, you know, all they tell me every time I go to the doctor is how, oh, you know, all the about the excessive weight gain that I've gained. So, yeah, to them, I've gained way too much weight, and I wonder to see where I will be at my 6-week appointment. But I mean, my appetite is, it'd be appetite in.
Yeah,
you're gonna be fine, Bianca. You're gonna thicken up.
But I don't, you know, I don't want to go back to, you know, when I got pregnant, I was 105 pounds. I don't care to go back to it. I was like, oh, you're gonna Kiki, snap right back.
I'm
like,
Kiki spirit is on you.
I don't really want to snap.
Kiki looks gorgeous. Oh my goodness.
She does.
And that's not a Kiki Palmer thing. My body was always body and respectfully. But like after I had my daughter, I finally got some breasts. Cause like I was always like a B or a C. So then I've been a D ever since. So I'm like, if there's a confidence that
the breasts never went down back?
No. They're still,
you know, about, like, oh, my breasts are gonna go shrink down to like raisins and
Miss Yeetie still yeeting in. Big titties, big butt too. It's a ratio.
What about you, Janice? Did your breasts like
shrink? My breasts grew so damn large when I was pregnant and breastfeeding. And then they went back down, they deflated, but not to my old size, you know.
Oh, so no, or not like smaller than your old size?
Not smaller than my old size.
Okay, because
no.
I've been seeing some women that they should be shriveled up like raisins, and I'm like, yeah, no.
And you know what causes that? It's not breastfeeding.
I meditate too much.
It's not breastfeeding that causes that. It's definitely pregnancy. Being pregnant, the hormones causes that.
And the applicator. I think it's all about the applicator because the skin is skin. The last
you put a lot of pumpkin seed oil and
counterclockwise, friend.
I did no aftercare on my boobs. I just let them hang. Well, I stopped wearing a bra.
I
don't
care if you're not wearing a bra. That's the aftercare. Mom says, I'm like, yeah, no.
She never wears bra. So get your partner to do it for you. Lay there. And pumpkin seed it up.
I need a real breast massage.
That sounds nice. Oh, lymphatic drainage. That's a thing. Mm-hmm. Breastfeeding. Mm. Like if it's like excessive fluid. Or if you're like really engorged, you know, do a light.
Yeah, so like even with my feet, I had really swollen feet. I wrap them in cabbage leaves. So I planned on if I had any engorgement in my breasts that I would like wrap my breasts in cabbage.
Yeah, like a cool compress. Yeah.
Also, like if after a half hour on my feet, you can feel the leaves like get really wet. So it's like you can feel the leaves absorbing all the water.
Okay.
So I'm sure it'll do the same thing with my breasts.
You don't put it in the pot with peppers or onions. You just throw it in the garbage.
Yes. It's done after that.
Oh my goodness.
This was a really well-rounded episode.
Yes. Thank you so much for your
transparency. So needed.
Your inspiration.
Oh, we're gonna have you back. You're in it now.
Yes, you're in it.
I feel like I'm a part of the brand.
You part.
You beauty.
You're in it, girl. And
so you know, I like to always end the episode with an affirmation.
Ooh, which one you have, baby girl?
Today, my affirmation is my baby and my breasts have a powerful relationship.
Yes, my baby and my breasts have a powerful relationship.
Absolutely. Yep. That I agree.
Affirmation of the day.
Yes.
Everybody for tuning in to part two of our lactation series. Stay tuned for more information because you know we're going and going and going and going.
Yep. Part two, not the last part.
Nope.
So I hope that all of you enjoy the rest of your week. And we will see you guys next week on Coochie Conversations. Yay!
Thank you.
Janita, you are so awesome.